This is the business of Africa. If it's about Africa, then it's our business, bringing big and small business issues right to your doorstep. So it's the third and last quarter of 2025 already. Can you believe it? And what a year it has been. For the African continent in particular, it can be very well argued that it has felt the birth pains of a multipolar world. In the face of aid cuts, the reconfiguration of global trade and growing anti-immigrant sentiment, the African Continental Free Trade Area, which is the largest in the world, is being touted as a game changer that can ensure the continent holds its own as power shifts. 7 years in, we review the business of the African Continental Free Trade Area as we look at how it has helped to bring about the Africa we want that can withstand external shocks. To help us do this, we are joined by Dr. Marvelous Ngundu, research consultant at African Futures and Innovation, who has done extensive work on the subject, and that's with the Institute for Security Studies. Thank you so much, Doc, for your time on the Business of Africa podcast. Maybe let's start with this concept of trade. What are we talking about and why is it important?
Good morning, Dudu, and thank you for having me. Before I answer your question, I would like to commend you for organizing a very crucial moment for Africa. The world is changing fast with global trade shifting, aid flows declining, new geopolitical tensions shaping investments. So for Africa, the African Continental Free Trade Area is the single most important project that can help us weather these shocks and perhaps build the Africa we want. So going back to your question, what is trade and why is it important? So at its simplest, trade is about exchanging what you have for what you don't have, whether that's goods, services, technology, knowledge, or capital. In reality, no country produces everything it needs, and trade allows us to specialize, it allows us to grow, it allows us to connect markets. For Africa in particular, it's especially important because our economies are individually small. So what trade does is that it gives African producers access to a continental market of over 1.5 billion people. For instance, we can have a Rwandan garment producer, which is no longer limited to the Kigali market, but also can extend sales to Lagos, to Johannesburg, or Nairobi under this free trade initiative. So that scale makes business more competitive and attractive to investors.
Thank you so much, Doc, for giving us that context. And so when we take a look at this single most important project, it's 7 years in. Maybe let's review how we are doing. We'll take a look at objectives. For the purpose of this discussion, can we please just look at three, right? And the first one being contribute to the movement of capital and natural resources and facilitate investments building on the initiatives and developments being undertaken by the state parties and regional economic communities. From the work that you do, how are we faring where this is concerned?
Well, we have seen progress, and I'll list quite a few examples.
Okay.
Intra-African investments are slowly growing. We can take an example of the South African retail chains like ShopRite, Pick n Pay, Massmart, and Choppies that have expanded into other African countries, right, in East and West and then in Southern Africa. Although competition is stiff, but that move to try other African markets signals an element of integration. Then in terms of infrastructure and resources, we have seen cross-border infrastructure projects. One of the commendable progress is made in the Lamu Port, South Sudan, Ethiopia corridor, which is currently nearing completion. I'm sure they are over 90% to complete that project. Then the COMESA One Border Initiative is also making progress through the introduction of a digital payment system to settle cross-border trade in local currencies. The establishment of one-stop border post and the development of a simplified trade regime, which can ease trade, especially for small-scale traders. Other efforts include developing an electronic certificate of origin and improving data collection for cross-border trade. So, under COMESA, these developments aim to reduce cost and complexity for traders, boosting formal and small-scale cross-border trade within the member states. But we are also experiencing the kick-in of regional value chains and special economic zone initiatives. For example, the Zambia DRC battery plant project, which is a transboundary battery and electric vehicle industry special economic zone, I'm sorry, intended to move the two countries up the value chain from just extraction of lithium, copper, and cobalt to processing of finished AV battery products. But challenges remain due to red tape and inconsistent investment regimes continue to hinder the free flow of capital. Capital constraints also inhibit infrastructure development. We Africans are more dependent on external financing rather than domestic finances. And we have also witnessed weak governance across many African countries, which is discouraging external investors and even the participation of the domestic private sector. So we are not where we want to be, but the groundwork is in place.
The groundwork is in place, and from what you have outlined, does that then answer the next question on one of the objectives, which is to enhance the competitiveness of the economies of state parties within the continent and the global market? It would sound like we're not where we want to be with that objective as well.
The reality is mixed when it comes to the competitiveness of the African economies. African companies often remain small and struggle with quite a number of bottlenecks, particularly energy, ICT, and logistic cost. But the free trade initiatives intends to change this by giving them some sort of a scale. A good example is Ethiopia's textile exports, which now find markets across Africa, and Kenya's IT sector, which is leveraging continental demand. So we are moving in the right direction, but barriers like border delays due to custom inefficiencies, expanded lead times due to poor transport infrastructure, high cost of energy, which translate to high selling cost of their products, still eat away that element of competitiveness within the African economies.
How then do we achieve the next objective, which is promoting industrial development through diversification and regional value chain development, including agricultural development and food security, which is quite important for the continent?
Well, that is a very important objective, but progress is visibly uneven under industrialization, diversification, and food security. I'll take, for example, Morocco in South Africa are leading in the automotive sector, and East Africa is growing in pharmaceuticals. On food security, the free trade initiatives has created a framework for regional agricultural trade. But this framework is still inhibited by politics, which often gets its way. For instance, during food shortages, some countries still ban exports instead of allowing food to move to where it is needed. So that undermines a regional food security. But overall, on the objective, it's more inhibited by politics, differences in the governance reform system, corruption, among others.
We'll park that one for now. And if we have time, I'd like for us to look at it, because I guess all of this hinges on getting that right from my very simple understanding. But let's look at the operational instruments of the African Continental Free Trade Area. And you can help us understand how they help reach the set objectives, right? So when we look at the rules of origin, there's five operational instruments of the African Continental Free Trade Area. One of them is the rules of origin. What are we talking about, and what is the current state of play, as well as the intended outcomes of the rules of origin?
Rules of origin are critical. Why? They ensure that goods labeled made in Africa are genuinely African. So some sectors are assorted in this, but others, like textiles and automotive, which are complex due to extensive value chains across the continent, they remain sensitive and are under negotiation. So until rules are fully agreed, the Free Trade Initiative won't unlock its full potential.
Tariff concessions is another one. What is the current state of play? Because this is quite important for many countries.
Again, on paper, 80 to 90% of the tariff lines have been liberalized, but the actual implementation remains slow. Many countries are cautious, worried about losing custom revenue. I can give you an example of Nigeria, which has moved cautiously because tariffs make up a bigger part of its budget. So we go back again to the issue of coherency in terms of the political will and the governance reforms. Are we on the same table, or we are just planning individually and pushing this free trade initiative only on paper?
And therein lies the question, because you've also got the Pan-African payment system, right? What is the current state of play, more so in terms of adoption? You've got a country like South Africa that is not part of it as yet.
So the Pan-African payment and settlement system is a game changer, because it allows African traders to settle payments in local currencies without converting it to the US dollar first, which is the main trading current meanwhile. This system is partly operational in the West Africa and recently in parts of the East Africa. But adoption is still patchy. Why? Banks and traders need more confidence to use it. They do not have confidence in the current political system of many African countries.
What of the online tool for, which is something you mentioned a little bit earlier on, the online tool for monitoring non-tariff barriers? What is the current state of play with non-tariff barriers?
The issue of NTBs seems to me live and works. Kenya and Rwanda has already flagged and resolved NTBs on it, but many traders don't even know it exists. So it's a matter of awareness to the traders when enforcing some of these tools.
You raised a point, Doc, about whether we are speaking in silos or operating in silos, or whether we have an understanding of the common objective, right? We've got 55 countries on the continent. We've got 8 regional economic communities. We've got 5 regions on the continent. You've got 33 least developed countries, more so when we speak about the different economic makeups of this continent. And so I guess maybe the question, or trying to get an understanding in terms of the African Continental Free Trade Area, yes, it is the single most important project for the continent. Yet when you see so much fragmentation, and I don't even know how to ask this question, but when you see so much fragmentation, how then, or what do we do to rally behind this project and make it a reality and not something that we're going to still be talking about in 20, 30 years' time? Yes, there's other economies that we can take a leaf from their books, right? Like the European Union, for instance, it did take them a number of years. Coming back to your point of political will, right, in making this a reality, you've drawn up some scenarios. Maybe help us understand how we can take this big elephant and chop it up into little chunks so that we can achieve this and this issue of cohesion. How do we achieve that?
So, Dudu, you have indicated one of the interesting things. Those 33 least developed African countries, in reality, they are rich in mineral resources. But what is lacking is an action for real transformation. There are no commitments to turn these resources into development outcomes. And I repeat, political will of the African governments needs to be revisited. Africa should speak with one voice, but at the moment, Africa is fragmented. Most of the negotiations done with the external partners are done at a bilateral level rather than at an African level. That won't get us anywhere. Number two, the issue of infrastructure is a game changer to make sure that the free trade initiative succeed. Without reliable energy systems, better roads, ports, and digital networks, trade will remain expensive. So that will keep inter-Africa trade at below 15%, and 85% of the trade will be done extra-Africa. With the resources going out to be processed in the global north and other emerging economies like China, while Africa is just a consumer of the manufactured goods. So the north-south corridor, the Abidjan-Lagos highway, and the Zimbabwe-Zambia-Kariba hydropower are good starts that we need to see progressing. Then the other thing to do is the issue of the private sector drive. Ultimately, governments sign treaties. That's all they do. But businesses, which is the private sector, do the trading. For example, the Dangote Cement operates across multiple African countries and shows how continental trade can work in practice by involving private sector in it. So coming to the issue of scenarios, in the best case, the Africa Free Trade Initiative creates strong value chains in agriculture. In other words, it promotes agro-processing.
Right.
It also creates opportunities for green industrialization. 70% of the cobalt, which is one of the critical mineral needed for green energy, is just found close here in DRC. So there is an opportunity for green industrialization. Lithium in Zimbabwe, Namibia, copper in Zambia. Then it also creates opportunities for manufacturing, positioning Africa as a credible global player. So at AFI, our work is predominantly quantitative and aligns with the recent World Bank study, which shows that the full implementation of the Africa Free Trade Area by 2035 will be transformative, lifting about 30 million Africans out of extreme poverty and boosting the income of nearly 38 million others who live on less than $5.50 per day. That's upper middle income countries like South Africa. It will also boost Africa's income by approximately $450 billion by 2035, which is a gain of about 7%, while adding approximately $76 billion to the income of the rest of the world. So it also increased Africa's exports by approximately $560 billion, mostly in the manufacturing. So under this initiative, Africa's annual exports will climb to over a trillion, something that we have never witnessed. Then the initiative also is inclusive. It spurs wage gains for women by almost 11% compared to almost 10% for men. Why? Because most of the small-scale traders are women. So if borders are opened across Africa, they allow these women to trade even more, increasing their wages. It will also boost wages for both skilled and unskilled workers, with about 10.3% for unskilled workers and 9.8% for skilled workers. So this is a transformative initiative which the African government should actually hold on to, not only as a blueprint, but take action to make sure that it succeeds. Then in the worst case, this initiative remains mostly a paper agreement with the countries dragging their feet. So yeah, this is the position, dude.
Yeah, what I'm ultimately hearing, Doc, or what we are ultimately hearing, especially when you open the conversation by saying that trade is essentially exchanging what you have for what you don't have, there needs to be a realization of what we have, because you can see what you have and sometimes you may not realize what it is that you have, especially when we speak about the next 10 years. 2035 is just around the corner. So we essentially have 10 years to have a good crack and a good go at this. And so, yeah, for all the reasons that you have outlined and for all the reasons that are contained within the document of the African Continental Free Trade Area on the African Union's website, it is important for each and every single one of us. And I think it'll definitely not just change the lives of Africans, because we always hear about this youth dividend, but what does it take to realize that dividend and to cash out that dividend? And so thank you very much for helping us make sense of this very big conversation that we are hoping to have a follow-up conversation on, or a follow-up on, because there is still much more to explore where the African Continental Free Trade Area is concerned. But for now, we say a very big thank you to you, Doc, for helping us make sense of all of this. And that was Dr. Marvelous Ngundu, Research Consultant at African Futures and Innovation. Thank you very much for tuning in to the Business of Africa podcast, where we bring big and small business issues right to your doorstep. You'll hear from us again in the next fortnight, God willing. Bahaichu, Pula.